Chapter 13. With the power of the great ocean at his disposal, there was little beyond the reach of an adept exemptus of the Thousand Suns. But even Phocis Takar would have been hard-pressed to create a kind shield capable of withstanding so many guns. Avava could protect himself with such a shield, but the rest of the Crusader host would surely be killed, and for the moment, he needed them alive. Freed from the limiting confines of his cell, Avava's power flowed back into his body. He wanted to savour this moment, to revel in the return of his full gamut of abilities and the clarity of thought that was his to command. But time was now his enemy, and the eye had work for him. Custodian Utam's blood flowed from the ruined stump of his neck, spilling over Athava's hand and streaming down his arm. The cracked tip of a crushed vertebra jutted from the wound, and the grey matter within would be beyond use in a few moments. But a few moments was less time than he had. The guns on the cavern walls opened fire, and a cascade of lasers and solid rounds drowned the din of alarms. Thousands of shells bombarded the floating island in a blitzing storm of fire. Avava dived inside the cell that had recently housed Tagore, but the world-eater sergeant flattened himself against its outer walls, too stupid or too proud to take refuge within its confines.
"Can you stop this?"
bellowed Tagore, his voice almost lost in the crescendo of gunfire. Acrid propellant smoke and billowing clouds of pulverized permacrete filled the air as the solid rounds smacked into the cells and chewed them apart like necrotic viral strains attacking healthy cells.
"That remains to be seen," shouted Athava in response,
pushing his consciousness into the custodian's head, directing the living power of the warp into the myriad dying blood vessels in an effort to keep brain death at bay. A breath sighed from the head as the mouth fell open in a silent scream. Athava felt the crackle of neural activity in the fitfully sparking synapses and meshed his mind with the dying brain. He goaded it back to life with immaterial energy, letting the power of the great ocean reanimate cells that had been on the brink of disintegration. Athava felt Utam's horror pricking the edge of his perception, and briefly wondered what manner of awareness the dead custodian might yet be experiencing. As more of Utam's brain returned to life, the stronger the maddened horror became. But Athava kept it at bay for now. With his mental architecture attuned to the rhythms of the Pavoni in the sixth enumeration, Athava let his body's newfound familiarity with Legio Custodi's blood restructure itself, altering his biometrics to more closely match those of his erstwhile jailer. Though Athava's body did not change outwardly, his inner flesh took on the guise of Utam Luna Heshudar at the cellular level, a crude deception conceived in haste that would not fool any gene sampler for long, but perhaps long enough. Much of what the custodian knew was Athava's to know. The layout of Kangbar Mawu, its security protocols, its roster of forces, and, most importantly, its entrances and exits. Though in the current situation the disabling codes for the cavern guns was top of Athava's list of information to pluck from the dead man's skull. Taking a deep breath, Athava cowled himself in the crudest of kind shields and stepped from the cell. A storm of shells battered him, enough to soar through an entire company of Imperial Army troopers in an instant, but the shield held firm for now. It seemed as though every gun on the cavern walls was aimed right at him, and Athava knew he would not have much time to make this work.
"All guns disengage and power down!"
he shouted. His voice so perfect an imitation of Utam Luna Heshudar that no vox sampler ever made would dispute the authenticity of the speaker.
"Authorization Omega Omicron 93 Primus!"
The deafening barrage of fire ceased in an instant, as every gun retracted into an armoured housing and shut down. Smoke and dust drifted on the wind currents created by the sudden heat and passage of tens of thousands of expended rounds. The howling alarm seemed almost quiet by comparison. Athava dropped his kind shield and let out a relieved breath as shapes emerged from the choking dust clouds. Five of them, all bulked by unimaginably complex science to a size far beyond human, yet moving with a gait that was clearly authored from the template of Homo sapiens. The twins were the first to emerge from the dust, Suba and Asuba, the butcher and the assassin. World-eaters and killers, neither bore the nightmarish augmetics of Tagore, but, like their brother sergeant, their bodies were pitched in a posture of taut aggression. Githua followed them, a warrior from Mortarian's legion whose bulk and solidity had made others in the Crusader host give him the epithet of Goliath, a giant from ancient myth. Argentus Chiron, the tall, broad-shouldered swordsman, jogged alongside him. The pair shared an unlikely friendship, for who would have thought warriors of the Emperor's children and Death Guard might find much in the way of common ground? Lastly came Severian, dubbed the Wolf by his fellows for the secretive and lonely path he trod. Athava barely knew him, but as a warrior from the legion of Horus Lupercal, he held a unique position amongst the warriors of the Crusader host. Crusader host. The name was a joke now. The three world-eaters greeted each other with clenched fists and primal displays of their strength, though Athava saw the subtle dance of superiority in its ritualistic displays of prowess. Alpha male and subordinates were clearly defined in the tilt of their heads and the bearing of necks. It made Athava want to smile, but Tagore would take a dim view of any such analysis of his warriors. Tagore swept up the guardian spear of the first custodian to die, testing the edge of the blade with a satisfied grunt. He snapped the haft just below the cutting edge, making what was left look more like a long-bladed cleaver, as Suba took up the spear blade Tagore had broken in his battle with Utam.
"How are we free?"
asked Chiron, picking up a fallen plasma carbine. The weapon looked absurdly tiny in his hands, but with a snap of a trigger guard, the weapon became usable.
"Is this your doing, Athava?"
Neither Githua or Asuba deigned to pick up a mortal weapon, but Severian slid a blade from the shoulder scabbard of a dead soldier clad in crimson plate. In the dead man's hands, it would have been a monstrous blade, a two-handed hewer of men. But to the lunar wolf, it was little more than a gladius.
"It is indeed my doing," replied Athava,
already jogging towards the bridge that led from the island.
"But explanations can wait until we are free of the mountain."
Tagore ran alongside him, glancing warily at the silent guns.
"How did you do that?"
he demanded, his words still slurred with the after-effects of combat drugs and the stress of his battle with the custodian. Athava shook his head.
"It would take too long to explain."
The world-eater took his arm in a powerful grip.
"I am not a fool, Athava. Tell me."
Athava wondered for a moment how he could possibly explain the intricacies of biopsychic engineering to a warrior of the world-eaters. It would be as futile as attempting to elaborate upon the shortcomings of Pandora Zheng as a scholar relative to the achievements of Azek Ahriman to an amoeba. He held up the severed head and said,
"I was able to extract the deactivation codes from the custodian's brain before it ceased to function."
Tagore eyed the head of the man he had killed with grim fascination.
"You sounded like him,"
he said. "Not quite the barbarian, then."
"I am a talented mimic,"
said Athava, once again using a flicker of his powers to alter the density and length of his vocal cords to match those of Custodian Utam. The bridge rang to the sound of heavy space marine treads as they crossed to the spur of rock at the edge of the depthless chasm. The warriors paused as they stepped from the bridge, all recognizing the significance of the moment. They were clear of their cells, but there was fighting yet to be done if they were to truly call themselves free. Athava felt Ciaron's eyes upon him.
"Is that head still alive?"
asked the warrior of the Emperor's children, with a grimace of distaste. Artificial colour in the warrior's hair had made him an albino while they had been honoured as representatives of the conquering legions, but deprived of his dyes as a prisoner, dark roots were showing at his temples.
"After a fashion," said Athava. "I can use it to get us past the guns, but we will have to hurry before the synapse connections degrade beyond the point where I can sustain them."
"You dishonour a fallen enemy,"
said Suba, pushing into Athava's face. Athava sent an exasperated glance into Gore's direction, and though the world-eater sergeant clearly shared Suba's feelings towards violating a fallen enemy's body, he nodded in understanding. Tagore thumped a fist against his chest, an old unity salute that seemed more in keeping with their status as captives than the Aquila.
"We are world eaters, Suba," said Tagore. "You were there at the great breaking of the chains. We swore to be no man's slaves, remember?"
"I remember,"
said Suba with a feral snarl, his fists clenched.
"We all remember," added his twin. "The crimson path before the iron fetter."
"Good words,"
said Tagore, gesturing beyond the stone archway before them.
"Words to live by. Words of meaning."
"Angron's words,"
said Suba, as though that settled the matter. But Athava didn't miss the uneasy glance shared by Asuba and Tagore.
"Beyond that arch lies freedom, but that freedom has to be won in blood,"
said Tagore, brandishing the spear blade.
"We will show our enemies what it means to put chains on a world-eater."
"We're wasting time," said Severian. "We should go, now."
"First sensible thing anyone said," grunted Githua. "Like as not we'll all die trying to get out of this place, but at least it'll be on our feet and facing our enemies."
"Die?" said Ciaron. "What force could lay low the Goliath? You are too big and stubborn to die, my friend."
"We can all die, Ciaron," said Githua. "Even me."
Kai sprang from the chair as alarm klaxons echoed from far away. It didn't take a psychic to figure out that something terrible was happening, something that had never happened in the jail of the custodians. Shaft's inexplicable behaviour and the alarms could mean only one thing. Someone was escaping from the mountain, and though he didn't know whom or how, Kai knew he was somehow included in this prison break. He wrenched the cannula and drips from his body, crying out as the needles ripped his skin. Blood ran down his arm, and clear plastic piping drooled coloured fluids to the tile floor of the interrogation room. The chemical stink of them was pungent, and Kai recoiled from the idea that he had been subjected to their effects. Kai backed away from Adept Hiriko, putting the chair between them. The extremities of his limbs were still tingling, and there was a clearness to his thinking that could only have come from the stimulant Shaft had fed him. His body was dreadfully weakened from the psychic abuses Hiriko had heaped upon him, and Kai had no idea how long he would be able to function before this new state of physical and mental clarity began to fade.
"Get back on the chair,"
ordered Hiriko, and Kai laughed.
"Seriously, you want me to get back into a chair for a procedure that's going to kill me? More lives than yours are at stake,"
said Hiriko, her green eyes boring into his.
"Lives more important than yours."
"Not a chance," said Kai.
"The Emperor's life,"
said Hiriko. That gave Kai pause, for he was still a loyal servant of the Imperium.
"You can't ask me to make that sacrifice,"
said Kai, his voice pleading.
"Why not?"
said Hiriko, circling the chair.
"You already gave up your eyes. Listen, Kai. Everyone makes sacrifices for the Emperor. The soldiers of the Imperial Army, the warriors of the Legiones Astartes, all the astro-telepaths who died in the Whispering Tower. Why should you be any different? All these sacrifices mean something, and you can make yours mean something too. Something infinitely greater than you can imagine. You would be a hero.
Kai shook his head as a wave of dizziness washed over him.
I'm not a hero, he said. I can't do something that's going to kill me. I don't have the courage. Of course you can, said Hariko. You think heroes aren't afraid? Of course they are. That's why they are heroes. They faced their fear and they overcame it. They did the right thing, even though it meant the end of their lives.
The tingling in Kai's limbs began to fade, and an icy numbness replaced it. He glanced over at Scharf, but the man simply stood there with the dead-eyed stare of a mannequin. There would be no help from that quarter. Hariko lifted a long, sharp-tipped hypodermic from the silver tray attached to the chair and stabbed the needle into a bottle filled with clear liquid. She drew a measure of the fluid into the body of the injector and tapped it to remove any lingering air bubbles.
"Very well, Kai," she said,
as a droplet of liquid beaded at the sharp tip of the needle.
"If you can't be a hero yourself, then I'll make you into one."
Into the corridor that led from the island, bright lumen strips banished shadows as Athava led the way down the rock-hewn passageway. Supa and Asuba flanked their sergeant, while Kieran and Githua ran side by side, with Severian at the rear of their ad hoc formation. Ahead, two Servitor crude turrets spun around to face them, servos whining as multiple barrels rotated and auto-loaders slammed shells into breaches. Red-eyed targeter lenses bored into Athava like the eyes of a demon.
"Athava," said Tagore.
"I see them," he answered, holding the disembodied head before him and allowing the targeting cogitators to scan its contours and electrical activity. He fed the dying cells within the brain, keeping them alive like a medicae, fighting to save a patient he knows will not survive his wounds.
"Utam Luna Heshudar,"
said Athava, once again using his Pavoni arts to replicate the dead custodian's voice.
"It's not working,"
said Kieran, pressing himself against the side of the passageway as the barrels continued to spin.
"It's working," said Athava through clenched teeth.
The custodians used advanced biometric readers in their automated weaponry, but hopefully not ones that could tell the difference between a warm body and one kept alive by psychic means. Athava felt the machine scan the head again, before remembering, though the memory was not his own, that the greenskin toxin that had taken Utam out of the front line made it more difficult for the signifiers to read him.
"Utam Luna Hesh Udar,"
he repeated with confidence, and this time the weapons accepted that one of their masters was standing before them. The barrels slowed, and the eyes of the servitors changed from red to green.
"Take them," said Athava.
The three World Eaters sprang forward like hunting dogs loosed from their chains. Asuba sprinted towards the gun on the left and vaulted onto the rungs of the maintenance ladder bolted to its side. His hands speared out, fingers rigid, and the servitor's head was severed from its neck as cleanly as though cut with an energized blade. His twin and Tagore sprang onto the turret on the right, their blades hacking deep into the servitor's body in a flurry of rapid punching blows. In seconds, nothing even remotely human was left of the cybernetic creature, just slopping chunks of carved meat that fell from the turret with a series of moist slaps. Yet for all the butchery of the slaying, there was no frenzy to the attack. Each blow precise and controlled without any wasted effort.
"Let's move,"
said Tagore, dropping to the ground. Athava moved past the turrets, impressed, despite himself, at the thoroughness and speed of the World Eater's attack. Kieran, Githua, and Severian followed at his heels, and Athava felt their admiration for their fellow's speed. At the end of the passageway, a heavily armored door blocked further progress.
its impenetrable facings painted black and gold, and marked with numeric codes that told Athava exactly where they were in the prison complex. Githua braced himself on the door and closed his eyes. Surely he didn't think to break the door open on his own.
2 meters thick at least, said Githua,
the muscles at his shoulders and biceps flexing like inflating fuel bladders.
If I had time and leverage, I could open it.
Which you don't, pointed out Chiron, aiming the plasma carbine at the door.
That won't even scratch the paintwork, said Githua with a disdainful glance.
Not even the combined strength of all 7 of us will be able to break it down, said Asuba. Athava, is there any life left in that head of yours? Can it open this door?
It better, or this is going to be a damn short escape attempt, said Suba.
Athava ignored them and lifted the head towards the black slate of the signifier mounted above the door. His hand was sticky with blood, and he felt the weight of death dragging the struggling synapses of the custodian's consciousness down into oblivion.
One last favour I must ask of you, Custodian Utam, said Athava, as he held the severed head up towards the signifier.
His breath came in short hikes as he poured the power of the great ocean into the dying organ within the severed skull. Such energies were creation unbound, but what was dead, and there could be no return from that black abyss. All Athava could hope was that Utam Luna Heshudar had not fallen too far into its embrace. Every scrap of his skill went into honing his deception, his genes donning the mask of another, and his muscle density altering to match the body mass of the custodian. The signifier clicked as the machine brain behind the blank slate considered the living creature before it.
"It's not working," he heard Chiron say. "Why would you break us out if you didn't have a plan to get us beyond the first damn door? I thought you Thousand Sons were supposed to be clever."
"Be silent," hissed Severian.
"I'll speak my mind as I please, wolf,"
said Chiron with a poisonous glare.
"Enough," hissed Asuba. "Give it a chance to work before admitting failure."
The hiss and thump of disengaging locks answered before Chiron could take issue with Asuba's words, and Athava sagged against the walls of the passageway as the door swung slowly open on greased hinges. The great ocean was a powerful tool to achieve impossible ends, but it was also a demanding master. No sooner had the door opened enough to allow passage than Severian ghosted through the gap. Tagore bent down to look Athava in the eye.
"Can you continue?" he asked.
Athava nodded and took a deep breath as he pushed himself upright.
"I can continue."
"Good," said Tagore. "I don't want to die here when the open sky is so close."
"You would stay here and die with me?" said Athava.
Tagore was a killer, but at least he was a loyal killer, like a faithful warhound that would fight and die beside its master. Tagore regarded him strangely, as though the question was beneath him.
"I do not like you, Athava, and there is yet a reckoning to be had between us. But you are a brother of the Legiones Astartes. We fight and die as one."
Athava doubted the rest of their group felt as strongly, but kept that thought to himself.
"Besides,"
added Tagore, gesturing to the severed head Athava carried,
"you are the only one who knows the way out."
"About that," said Athava, "we need to make a detour before we get to the surface."
"A detour? What are you talking about?"
Athava dropped Custodian Utam's head and wiped frosty sweat from his brow.
"There is another prisoner we have to free before we leave this place of incarceration."
"More soldiers are coming," said Tagore. "We do not have time for fool's errands."
"This is no fool's errand," snapped Athava.
"We free this prisoner, or else we may as well surrender now." "Who is this prisoner? What is he to us?"
demanded Tagore. "Someone more important than you can possibly imagine," said Athava. "Someone upon whom all our fates may rest."
Kai could not take his eyes from the droplet on the end of the needle. The label on the bottle from which it had been drawn was turned away from him, but he had no doubt that it was a powerful sedative. The hypodermic contained enough to put him out in moments, or perhaps even kill him.
Hatepchef, or whoever you are, said Kai. Are you just going to let her do this?
Shah flinched at the mention of his name, but did not move or otherwise acknowledge Kai's words. Whatever notion had possessed Shah to help him had clearly passed, but neither had he shown any inclination to help his former colleague.
This is Adept Hariko. Immediate assistance required,
said Hariko, speaking into a vox bead at her collar.
Interrogation cell 47 Primus Zero.
She smiled and said,
In moments, there will be a squad or more of soldiers here, perhaps even a custodian, so you might as well surrender now.
I'll take my chances, said Kai, lunging for the door.
He pressed the opening mechanism, but the door stayed resolutely closed. It had been a forlorn hope to imagine the door wouldn't be locked, but it was all he had. He turned just as Hariko lunged at him with the needle extended before her. He raised his hands to fend her off, and more by luck than judgment, managed to grip her forearms with the needle less than a hand's span from piercing the pulsing vein at his neck. Though she was short and slender, Hariko was stronger than she looked, and the needle inched towards his skin. Whatever Scharf had given him to counteract the soporific drugs that had kept him placid was clearly wearing off. Kai found himself staring into Hariko's lambent green eyes and had a brief moment to reflect that if he was going to die here, at least it would be while staring at something beautiful. He felt the needle depress the surface of his skin, but before it could draw blood, Adept Scharf had his hands wrapped around Hariko's shoulders. He yanked her off her feet and hurled her against the chair that had held Kai prisoner for so many nightmarish sessions of psychic interrogation.
Scharf!
Yelled Hariko.
Whatever is in you, fight it!
Her attacker paid no heed to her words, and Kai slid down the wall beside the door as he punched her square in the face. Hariko reeled from the blow and sagged against the chair. Scharf leapt upon Hariko and wrapped his hands around her neck, throttling the life out of her, even as his face purpled with the effort of resisting the force that impelled him to murder. Kai knew he should join this struggle, but his limbs were filling with ice water and lead. Scharf's hands were crushing the life from Hariko, and the restraint she had shown towards her fellow neurolocutor was forgotten as she accepted that the force controlling Scharf was too strong for him to defy. Kai saw the needle glint in the harsh overhead lights and watched as it described a short arc that saw it thrust into Adept Scharf's eye. The man howled and his back arched in pain. Scharf hurled himself away from Hariko as though distance from the source of his hurt could somehow lessen it. Viscous fluids drooled down Scharf's cheek, and he flopped onto his back as the chemicals raced into his brain. His body convulsed as rogue electrical impulses sent his muscles into spasm. Spittle flew from his mouth, and a hideous wet gurgling bubbled up from his lungs with bile-flecked foam. Scharf beat his heels on the floor and scrabbled with clawed hands, tearing out his fingernails and leaving bloody tracks on the tiles. Hariko slumped to the floor as Scharf's body twitched with what remained of his life, and Kai felt sick to his stomach at the sight. He had watched the astropaths of Choir Primus die, had felt Sarashina's blood on him, and had listened to the entire crew of the Argo die. But to see a man die so painfully right in front of him was a truly horrific sight. The interrogation chamber was silent, save for the soft chiming of the bio-monitoring equipment, Hariko's laboured breathing, and the dripping of noxious saliva from Scharf's gaping mouth. Kai let out a terrified breath, knowing he had only a few precious moments to make the most of the opportunity Scharf had given him. Before he could do more than recognise that fact, a booming impact struck the door of the interrogation chamber. Another swiftly followed, and Hariko smiled as she slid down onto her side.
They're coming for you,
she said, her words coming out in a hoarse rasp. Another impact shook the door, and this time it buckled inwards, the locks holding it closed shattered by the force assaulting them. One further blow tore the door from its housing, and it landed on the tiles with a booming clang. A towering shape in a form-fitting yellow body glove ducked through the doorway, and Kai backed away from this latest terror. Long black hair framed a face of thick, flattened features that nevertheless combined in a handsome whole, and Kai smelled a pungent reek emanating from the warrior's skin as he extended a hand towards him.
Kai Zulain, I am Athava of the Thousand Suns, said the giant. Come with me.